KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Good morning. In the studio with me now, Director of the Summit Land Conservancy, Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
Let's see. Good turnout for your film festival?
We had a great turnout for the film festival this year. And thank you to everyone who attended, to our wonderful volunteers. We can't put that on without our volunteer support, to our title sponsor, Intermountain Healthcare, and also the Grubstake and Summit Sotheby's, who helped us out. It was a great event, as usual. We had some really amazing films, and so again, thank you everybody who came out and enjoyed that. That's our big membership drive, so it's nice to have new people who come and see the films. There are a lot of regulars we're finding that really have gotten into that film festival and realize what fun it is. Coming up this summer, we've got Hops Hunters again that will be going out on our easement properties and looking for those wild hops. Wasatch Brewing is again going to brew a beer, and if you missed it last year, it was really delicious. And so the clothing optional will be coming back again, we hope, this year. You know, when we did it the first year, we went out to harvest the hops and we were too late because they had frozen. And this year, in 2014, when we harvested them, it was this absolutely frigid day in August. If you remember, it actually snowed in August, and it was sort of one of those late August days. But we harvested those things, and they made a delicious beer. We also have another volunteer opportunity coming up this summer. We're piloting two summer camps this year. We're really finding that it's important to get kids outdoor, unstructured playtime. If you've got kids, you're probably reading a lot about the multitude of benefits that kids get from free play outside. And it's really something that's missing in a lot of our kids' lives these days because, A, we're afraid to let them go outside and play by themselves, and B, they're just so busy and they have so many other things distracting them. So we have these two summer camps. They're adventure camps, and in the morning, they go and do something, a structured activity, a lead activity. So they do mountain biking, fly fishing, rafting, climbing, all kinds of crazy things. And then we have lunch, and then in the afternoon, they have some free play time. So if people would like to help us out with that, we can use some volunteer support. There's a week in July and a week in August, and they can go to our website, wesaveland.org, and click on the volunteer opportunities if they want to help us out with that.
Okay. You spent some time in Washington, D.C. doing what?
I was so inspired. I was invited to go to Washington, D.C. to talk to our Utah state senators about conservation programs at the federal level that help us save land right here in Summit County. And so I met with Mike Lee's staff. I met with Senator Hatch's staff. I met with Rob Bishop's staff. And then I was part of a team, so I also met with a bunch of people from New Mexico. And it was really amazing. I got to sit in on a land and water conservation Senate hearing, you know, and there was Elizabeth Warren, and there was Lamar Alexander, and there was Senator Murkowski. And, you know, I wouldn't know a Kardashian if she came up and hit me on the head. But these people, and there they were governing. It was really amazing. The best thing about it was the whole point of us being there was to make these federal programs real, personal, to illustrate them. Because I think sometimes, you know, you're back in Washington, D.C., and you're talking about a conservation easement tax incentive, and it's very dry, and it's very legalistic. And so we sat in this room with Senator Hatch's senior tax counsel. Senator Hatch is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. So he controls that agenda. He controls whether or not these tax incentives will go forward. And as we talked to the tax guy, he was kind of like, well, yeah, whatever, you know. And then we started talking about Weber Canyon, and it turns out one of the other guys in the room has a summer home up in there, and we were talking about fishing, and we talked about what happens when we're not successful, when the landowners can't do the deal, because it's such a major sacrifice in so many ways that they're doing. And afterwards, we heard that the aide said he hadn't understood how this easement that he works on, this tax incentive that he works on, really translated into rivers running and ranches continuing to be effective and continuing to work. And he said, I didn't realize that this was important to me. So we feel like that was worthwhile, in addition to being inspiring. And, you know, I think that the Summit Land Conservancy uses a lot of federal programs. Clearly, the conservation easement tax incentive is one that our landowners on the Weber River are able to use, but also farm bill funding, land and water conservation funding. So what the federal government does is important, and it makes a difference to our ability to save land here in Summit County.
Yeah. So did you see actually any changes that are going to happen as a result of your visit?
As a result of the whole Land Trust Alliance visit, there is a bill in front of the Senate. The House already passed it to make these easement tax incentives permanent. And we're really trying to get that moving forward. Before the Advocacy Day, there were 9 co-sponsors in the Senate. Now there are 20. So, yeah.
So likely to get through.
We hope so. We sure hope so. What's been happening is they do it in December. But, you know, and then you have 2 weeks to finish an easement. It takes longer than that.
Yeah. Also, you're working on a restoration project on the Virginia Mine Claim. What's happening there?
That's right. So the Virginia Mine Claim is a 13-acre easement up here above Old Town. And it's one of those pieces of open space that everybody sees when they're on Main Street, but probably doesn't realize that you see it. And we had some trees get cut down accidentally a couple of years ago. And then they planted some new trees, and those haven't really taken foot. And so we are working with a great coalition. The Park City Day School kids have been coming out all season long, all year long, to help us work on a couple of things. So they're going to help us replant some native trees, some aspens and some gamble oak. Tree Utah is helping us out. And of course, the city, Park City Municipal, has been a great partner in working on this. And also some neighbors are helping out. So we're really excited. We're going to be up there on Friday. So if you see people up there digging some holes and doing one thing or another, that is a restoration project. Making that property better.
I wanted to also ask you, tomorrow the Summit County Council taking up a discussion with regard to the second phase of the Snyderville General Plan, part of that on open space. An amendment says that before conservation can easement or deed restriction can be recorded, the county needs to study the transportation values on the open area. What does that mean?
I think that clearly, transportation is a hot issue right now in the community. I myself was stuck in Carmageddon on that day in December. And so it's in the forefront of everybody's thoughts right now. The Mountain Accord has some fairly interesting transportation ideas that they're proposing. So it's a great idea to say, look, we're really going to look at transportation right up front. As always, the concern that the Summit Land Conservancy has with these issues is if you buy something with bond money, that's open space, and it needs to be open space. And parking lots and transit buildings and roundabouts are useful and obviously necessary public amenities, but they don't fit with open space. So I think it's really great that the plan is endeavoring to look at these uses before you buy it. And certainly before you put an easement on it. Because once you put an easement on it, if you want to change that use to something so dramatically different, to something that is not recreational open space, it's really too late. So I think it's a great idea to talk about that up front and make sure that if you're going to save something for open space, it's because it is important to the wildlife, it is important to the community for views or recreational access or trails or just quiet space and trees.
So have we had a problem with that, though, in the past? Where now all of a sudden open space needs to be a parking lot or something?
I think there is a piece of property that was purchased primarily, or it was at least expressed to the community that it was purchased primarily with open space. And we had an event out there and we said, look at this great piece of property that we saved. It was a great purchase. It removed an awful lot of density at Kimball Junction. And yet there's no easement recorded on that property because there are so many competing interests for that land. And part of the issue was when it was purchased, a lot of different money sources were put in to buy that land because it was so expensive. So while there was open space money that went into it, there was also some transportation money and some school money and all this thing. And what you end up finding is, you know, I feel like the community looks at that and says, ooh, that's open space. But it's, you know, as Miles Radiman likes to say, it's a ghost open space. Part of it will certainly always be open space. It will have to be because of the bond languages protect us a little bit in that. But I really think that it is very important to be clear about our intents when we buy stuff up front.
So you're in support of that amendment then?
I think so.
Okay. Cheryl, thanks.
Thank you.
Cheryl Fox with the Summit Land Conservancy. It's 8:22 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've reported, the founding director of the PC CAPS, or Park City Center for Advanced Professional Studies, has announced her resignation at the end of the school year. Jennifer Jackenthal now joins me in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So with the success of the program really just growing now after 3 years, why leave?
Well, my job was to create it and get it to be viable. And so I feel like it's a little seedling that's now ready to be planted back in the high school. My skill is really building things rather than necessarily administering them or being an administrator. So I think Lindsay Anderson is a great pick to take over the program. Mo Hickey's going to be on our advisory board. I'll stay on the advisory board because I think it's really important to continue to, you know, pass on the knowledge and the experience that I gained. We have some amazing teachers that really have come into their own and developed amazing programs. So I think it'll be just fine without me.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, Assistant Park City High School Principal Lindsay Anderson going to oversee PC CAPS now. Huh? It doesn't need now then a full-time director?
Well, she is a full-time director. Mm-hmm. She won't be the assistant principal anymore. She also oversees the Learning Center, but PC CAPS is going to be her main focus.
Okay. But it's still, I mean, she does have other duties, I guess, is what I'm saying. So
Right. And like I said, there's a big part of it that has become more administrative and maintenance than growth and getting its roots planted and that sort of thing. So it's a different role, and that's totally her skill set. So
yeah. So what was the most difficult part of the job? I mean, was it finding companies to work with?
No, we actually have more projects and mentors than we need every semester. I think the biggest part of the process was really educating the community, the parents, and the students about the needs of employers today are not what they were before, and the skills that our kids need, and the value for the students to have this sort of a business network, have their scholarship and college applications written by, you know, a VP at Adobe rather than all teachers or all counselors. Those are things that are invaluable to the kids. And just getting their sleeves rolled up and involved in the real world has been a real eye-opener for them. And I think that's the real benefit of the program.
So you really have them kind of as the messengers to pass it on. I
mean, they all feel like it's made a big difference. They all. 75% of the last group surveyed feel like it has given them a leg up in getting into college because they have a story to tell that's different than, you know, the average kid. So
you basically started the program from scratch. I mean, did you have some kind of model to follow on, or was this just...
Well, there's a program in Overland Park, Kansas called Blue Valley CAPS, and it gave us some framework, but that school district has 5 high schools, and so it's very different to create a program for a school district that has a lot less students. And they have the program every day, and we have every other day. So we took some ideas from them for sure, and that's always a good idea, take best practices, and then we made it our own in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, so you were really not a supporter of moving CAPS into the high school library. Has anything to do
actually,
with...
Actually, I'm not an opponent to that at all. It's a beautiful space. It gives the kids an extra 2,000 square feet. It's going to be remodeled. It'll be very similar to the space that they're operating in today. I think probably the biggest challenge is that there's no parking. And with 600 mentor hours this year, that's a lot of people driving back and forth and participating in the program. And there is nowhere to park at the high school. Kids are getting towed all the time. So I think that's the biggest challenge. I think it's great exposure to the program for other kids to be able to see it and peek in the window and see how cool it is. So I'm not an opponent of that at all.
Okay. So it doesn't really matter where it is. I mean, there was a lot of talk about that. It needed to be kind of off-site, but...
Well, I think that the majority of people still feel pretty strongly that it should be off-site because we really want it to be something very different than the general high school experience. But, you know, there are a lot of priorities for the school district and a lot of decisions need to be made. And, you know, the library, unfortunately, kids aren't checking out books the way they used to. And it's a space that Dr. Connolly felt was the right place for CAPS. So,
all right. So what are the programs that the PC CAPS is offering? We hear a lot about the physics and or the engineering and design program. What else?
Right. So we have engineering,
software development and digital design and interactive marketing and business strategy. Those are the business ones that operate in that consulting firm type environment. And then we have a really great teacher ed program. And I don't know if your listeners know, but 1 million teachers are retiring in the next 5 years or 6 years across the country. And there is going to be a huge problem as far as not having enough teachers. So teacher ed is something that is a career. Teaching is a great career. And our CTE program doesn't really address that. So we address it in CAPS. And it's been a really, Ollie Webb and Lori Halls have done a great job with that program.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that just seems so, I mean, do you actually take kids, the students out to schools?
Oh, yeah. So they're actually in the classroom only on Fridays, so every other week. And they're out teaching with their teachers and helping develop curriculum all the other days. So they are doing the same thing that you would do as a third year teaching college student, which is great because they get to find out if teaching is really for them rather than finding out third year of college.
Yeah. So do we need to add more? Or
add more what?
More of those kind of offerings, you know, like teacher ed and software development, or have we covered all of the bases?
I think we have enough offerings because within each, there's so much variety. You know, there are over 80 different kinds of engineering. And so if a kid is interested in engineering in general, then we have everything from software to robotics to architecture to, or not software, but robotics, architecture, solar. We're doing some things with retinas for eyes in that classroom. There's just so much variety between the different industries and the different types of projects. It's not really necessary to add another quote-unquote subject.
Mm-hmm. And of those, I mean, what's not as popular? I mean, is it something that could get cut or?
No, I don't think there's anything that's going to be cut. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all really valid programs. Our digital design program at the high school, the CTE digital design, has had an unfortunate set of teachers that left. And so the program has sort of deteriorated in terms of the technical class. And so there's a less of a pipeline into our program because of that. But Michelle Dietrich runs the digital design over at Treasure, and it's super popular. So we're starting to see a lot of those students come into CAPS now. And then software development, I think a lot of people think of software development as programming. And there's so much more to it than programming. There's 3D modeling, game development. There's just so many different things going on in that classroom that aren't necessarily coding. But I think our kids aren't really exposed to the different careers that are available out there. When someone says, hey, you could be a programmer, well, what does that mean? And so I think that would be a goal for all of us, is to help our kids understand what the different careers are that are out there that they could be exposed to.
I remember talking with Mike Wong and some of his students about their building blocks. I mean, that seemed like one of those great inventions. Did you have any others that were like that?
Have a couple right now in the software class that are potentially patentable. And we're starting to work with some of the programs, the entrepreneurship programs in the state, like the Lassonde Center at the U, and talking to Zions Bank and their entrepreneurship program to try to figure out how to take that to the next level, because the kids graduate. And so unless they take it with them and they want to actually start the company, then what happens? So you started a lot of that at the university level. So we're starting to explore how to take that forward at the high school level.
All right. Well, so what's next for you?
Well, that's a great question. You know, it's been really exciting to see the economy has turned around. You know, if you look out for marketing jobs, which is my background, there are lots and lots of them. But I've really, really enjoyed making a difference in education. And so I've had several conversations with people at the state level, business and education collaboration. And I think something's going to happen there, so I'm excited about that possibility. I'll let you know when I know.
Okay. At this point, it's kind of open-ended then.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck and congratulations on building the program.
Thanks so much.
It's Jennifer Jack. It's 8:35 now. Good morning. Well, the Summit County Council meeting in session tomorrow, starting at 1:50 p.m. at the Sheldon Richens Building at Kimball Junction. In the studio to take a look at the agenda with me, I have County Manager Tom Fisher.
Good morning,
Tom.
Leslie.
Let's see. First off, the possible improvement of agreements and memorandum of understanding to move the Summit Community Garden from the site near Highway 224, known as the Miss Billy spot, further back to the Matt Canute Park. And here it's going to be overseen by the Rec District. So what are the current problems, or what are the problems with the current site?
Well, you know, as I was reading the staff report, it looks like, you know, access, being able to carry equipment and gardening needs from parking lots to the sites that were being used were a problem. And it was just difficult for the groups that were using the current placement. So Basin Rec has relooked at that, and now they're moving forward with this new concept.
Okay, and we've got water to the site as well?
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right. Also, transportation planning staff will report on their efforts so far to pursue the council's goals. Any update there from you?
Well, I mean, one of the big updates is that we will be putting out an RFP in conjunction with our partners in Park City to start our once a week campaign. So we'll be seeing that come forward in the rest of the year. Really, an effort by both councils to energize people to use alternative transportation.
Okay, so you're going to set up a citizens advisory board for this?
Yeah, well, not directly for that concept, more to help guide and give advice on some other ideas that could come forward for transportation in the future. It's really to have a group that can help vet problems and vet solutions.
All right. You'll also be working with Park City on special events. Any progress on the Kimball Transit Center?
Got a slight update from Derek Radke the other day that we are finishing up the RFP to select our design consultant. Mm-hmm. So we should be in design very quickly.
All right. What about the underpass at Blue Roof Market? I think that's pretty much where we want to do it. But
well, I mean, that's certainly what Basin Recreation has brought forward, and our engineers have brought forward to council. I think council would like to get a little public vetting on that before they make any of their decisions regarding that.
All right. Also, a discussion regarding a storm water management plan. Why now?
Well, it's a federal mandate that is finally reaching communities of our size to improve water quality. And, you know, the whole idea is to manage what goes into our stormwater system so that it improves the water quality of our watersheds. Our engineers now are bringing forward our plan, which has to be submitted to the state for compliance.
Is there a problem with the way that we handle stormwater at this point?
No, I think all of our municipalities in the county have ordinances in place that essentially comply with these things already. But there are some additional things that have to happen, some education, working with contractors and property owners a lot more to help control runoff and other issues related with stormwater.
All right, so Summit County is what's known as an MS4 designation?
That's correct. That's the federal designation that says that our area has to comply with these regulations.
All right, it's not because we're at like the headwaters of drinking water.
No, it's mainly deals with population size at this point, and it's pretty much everywhere in the country now that has to deal with these MS4 regulations.
All right, council will also be getting an introduction to the mental health substance abuse needs. You have a report from Judge Kerr and Health Director Rich Bulla saying that nationwide, the mentally ill and those abusing substances are getting housed in our jails. Locally, are the treatment programs being ordered by judges adequate, or do we need something more?
Well, I think that's the big question. I mean, there's been some changes in federal law. There's been some changes in state law that, especially when it comes to sentencing guidelines for different types of substance possession. And so I think the judge and the health department, as well as our county attorney's office and the sheriff, really are kind of starting to figure out what is going to be the impact on Summit County for these issues, and how are they all going to work together in the total public safety system to see if we have a problem and what exactly needs to be done to address that problem.
The report also notes that some recent state legislation transferring drug offenses from district court to justice court. So could we see an impact there?
Absolutely. And that's what we don't know. One of the things that we don't know yet, we're going to have to gather some data over the next year, 2 years perhaps, to really look at what that means. Certainly the local courts are concerned about that because they think some volume will go up, and as a result, you know, we'll have to deal with some of that those issues in sentencing within our jails. So that's what we really need to look at, that total system, to see what the impact of these changes will be.
All right. Also, a discussion for a spa for Deer Meadows. This is a project in the Tollgate Canyon area asking for 7 units or nearly 100 acres. We've seen several versions of this in the past 7 or 8 years. Council has certainly reviewed it. Do they have to decide if this is offering enough community benefits?
It's not a decision point this evening. All the applicant and staff are looking for is some direction from council on whether this would provide community benefit or not. So essentially that's what council will be discussing this evening.
Okay. And I guess probably the biggest item on the agenda is the discussion with regard to the second phase of the general plan. The council asked staff to add some stuff like solid waste and broadband technology. So that's in there now?
They have reacted to the council's comments. So we will hear more comments from the council if they have any, and see if they're satisfied with the changes that were made. And then further on in the agenda will be the first public hearing on that general plan.
All right. Has the plan been amended to address any transportation issues lately?
Slightly. They've made some statements in it to follow the council's direction on essentially being able to evaluate different properties for their transportation impacts before we make decisions on those properties.
I asked Cheryl Fox from Samet Land Conservancy about this as well, but one amendment there is on open space, and basically that before we record a conservation easement or a deed restriction, the county needs to study the transportation values on the open area. Shouldn't we really do this before we buy the property?
We probably should be looking at the transportation impacts of it along the whole way. I mean, because the hardest part that we see is that we don't want to close out options that we may need in the future, or deliberately close out options that we don't want to see happen in the future. Probably the conservation easement time is appropriate because that's when we put restrictions on things.
Yeah, but still, when we look at like the PRR property that we bought with some open space money, certainly there's still no easement on that property.
There isn't, however, there's still values that were expressed when the property was purchased, and the partners that purchased that property will defend those values over time. But that's an example of where we've left some flexibility as a community, and that's probably appropriate.
All right, and then the provision in the development plan, general plan, says that no new entitlements be built until the current ones are substantially built out. That remains, huh?
Yeah, and that's probably one of the more controversial areas of the plan, and I expect that we'll hear some comments about that this evening. I think and Pat Putt would be a lot more eloquent about the impact of that. But, there's a lot of development right out there that can be absorbed, transferred, other different concepts in order to do developments that still need to happen or we want to happen. So this general plan is trying to encourage some different kinds of development.
Yeah, and when you use the word substantially, I mean, that's very subjective, I think, in some people's minds. I mean, do we have some kind of threshold or some criteria by which to measure substantial?
Well, I think we will have that threshold, and I think we'll see that come forward as we do the code amendments.
All right. Let's see. Also, in some recent hearings, that this has brought about some criticism, like we talked about, like the Bittner family. You heard from the Bittners again last week. Their proposed development prompted the recent TZO last week.
Correct.
So what's your position on the grievances that you've heard from the Bittner family?
Well, I don't particularly have a position at this point. And I'm still learning a lot about those things. But, it's the natural toss up between planning for the future in our general plans and property owners trying to maximize value on those properties. And we both have responsibilities on both sides. So I think we're going to hear a lot more discussion about that.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I don't have anything today.
All right, Tom. Thank
you.
Thanks
a lot.
It's 8:49 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Since 2007, Mike Gore has been the man in charge at Canyons Resort. He is now off to manage Keystone Resort in Summit County, Colorado. He joins me now in the studio for a farewell interview. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you.
So I thought you didn't start until maybe August 1st. I think that's what the original press release said, but things are moving up, huh?
Yep, things have been moving quickly. So when we made that initial announcement August 1st, internally we viewed that as, you know, kind of not later than August 1st. So as things have transpired, we saw the opportunity with all of these moving parts. John Bueller, who's right now at Keystone, moving on, and Pat Campbell will be taking Blaze Carrig's role as president of the Mountain Division later this summer. So, yeah, we just have accelerated everything, and now it's May 18th.
So your last day at Canyons is the 17th, and you get in a car and start the next day?
That's right. I'll drive that weekend out to Keystone, and I still have some business here, particularly over those first couple of weeks. So I'll be back and forth a little bit, but certainly primarily at Keystone from the 18th on.
Yeah. Did you make any trips over the winter to kind of get an idea of winter operations?
I did. I made a number of trips and met the staff, the senior team, a number of departments, as well as community and government leaders in Summit County. So those trips were very helpful, and I feel like I'm going to hit the ground running when I get there in a couple of weeks.
So I've never been. Tell me where it is. I mean, is there a town close by?
Yeah, so, you know, Keystone and Breckenridge are very close together, and the communities there are Dillon, Frisco, Silverthorne. They're all right there together, and in fact, we'll live in one of those communities, and we don't know which one yet. So we've got to figure that out as well.
Yeah, in the meantime, you just rent a place, or do they have employee housing or any kind?
Yeah, I'll stay in one of our properties for the very short term, but then we'll rent a place for the upcoming season.
All right, and how long of a commute then between one of those towns and the resort?
Just minutes, mere minutes. Yeah, less than 15 minutes from any of those areas.
All right. Well, you've been in the ski industry, I think, now nearly 40 years or so. You started working where and doing what? As a lifty or?
Yeah, I started out as a ski patroller at Sunrise Resort in the White Mountains of Arizona in 1976, and then came to Solitude in 81. And as you know, I worked there a long time until 07 for the DeSille Horse family, which was a tremendous experience. And yeah, I've been at Canyons then from 07 on.
And that was when what? I mean, what happened in 07? Was it ASC at that point that brought you over?
So Talisker had Canyons under contract to purchase. So I came in 07 to work on the completion of that transaction and then stay on as the president and general manager.
All right. So now Solitude, of course, a resort owned by Deer Valley. That's just what happens in the ski industry, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable, and it's exciting times for everybody, I guess.
Well, so during your 8 years at Canyons, I mean, anything that you would point to be, I mean, something you're real proud of?
Well, there's many things I'm proud of, and it's not so much on a personal level as it is on the folks that I've worked with at Canyons. And I'm not shy of saying I've rode the backs of many fine employees over the years. And the credit goes to that team, and they're all still there and will continue as the resorts are combined in senior leadership roles, many of them. But I will say this, that team orchestrated quite a transformation of Canyons Resort over the years. And all the way from the purchase from American Skiing to the purchase by Vail Resorts. And in those 8 winters, certainly saw a lot of change, not only in ownership, but in the offering and the brand and level of service and everything else. And that's a credit to the team that has been there and is still there going forward.
Well, you certainly saw a lot of improvements over those years. I mean, we've seen a golf course built. We saw like the million-gallon pond built, some new lifts as well.
Yeah, I mean, an extraordinary amount of improvements in that amount of time. Great support from the owners, both Talisker and Vail. And but the execution is as important as anything at the end of the day. And I just can't say it enough. The team that made those improvements, built everything, and then executed on the delivery was really exceptional.
So most challenging, I'm guessing, had to be the whole ski link idea. Whose idea was that anyway?
Well, to those of you that like the idea, it was my idea. No, in all honesty, here's what I would say, Leslie. Ski link really was part of the bigger idea of connecting the resorts, and I've long been a proponent of that, and I still think it's a unique opportunity for the industry. I've also always said that there is a right way to do it, and by that I mean it's got to be sensitive to other users and the impacts to backcountry in particular, backcountry users, dispersed recreationists, to everyone. And so I think that idea came about by saying the idea of connecting the resorts is a good idea, and how do we move it forward? And that was a piece of it. It was by far the most difficult piece of any of the connections that have been considered, is to get from the Park City side into Big Cottonwood Canyon. And that was a tough one. And but it was perhaps a piece of what might lead to some connections in the future done in the best way possible.
So with Mountain Accord, this is pretty much dead in the water at this point.
I would say so. I don't see anyone picking a ski link up at this point.
Yeah. So what's Keystone like? I mean, is it large? How does it compare to maybe Park City or Canyons?
Yeah, pretty similar, actually. About 3,300 acres of skiable terrain, plus a big cat skiing operation that's up above treeline. It skis to 12,000 feet at the top of the lift-served terrain, and about 3,200 vertical, 20 lifts, and some fantastic cruiser terrain, long vertical drops, and the groomed ski terrain, as well as that cat skiing operation. It's a really great ski resort, and a great staff. Again, I had, as I mentioned earlier, the opportunity to meet many of them, and it's a well-run ski resort, and I'm excited to join that team.
Yeah. So did they get over 100 inches of snow this year, unlike what we did?
Yeah, I think they got about 250, something like that.
So they did okay with the jet stream.
They did. They had a good, strong winter.
Yeah. So what are you going to miss most about leaving Utah? Been here a while.
Yeah. Community had, you know, I've had the good fortune of a lot of support from the community and co-workers. I'm going to miss everybody that I've worked with and associated with in the community. And it's an exciting time for the Utah ski industry. It's certainly an exciting time for Park City, the town, as well as all three resorts. We'll soon be saying two resorts, but it's all good. And perhaps one other thing I'd like to say. I mentioned the team that I work with at Canyons, but I also appreciate the support KPCW has given the industry and our resort and me personally over the years. And one of our neighboring resort operators, Bob Wheaton, longtime friend and mentor. I certainly appreciate everything he's done for me. And just everyone I've crossed paths with, they've been terrific.
So with an epic pass and an eight-hour drive, we can come see you in Keystone.
Doors open. I'm telling everybody here, come see me at Keystone.
Okay. Best of luck to you, Mike.
Thanks, Leslie.
It's Mike Gore. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.